Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
The Academy Awards are this Sunday. History might be made. Lily Gladstone is up for an Oscar for Best Actress for her performance in Killers of the Flower Moon. If she wins, she'll be the first Native American woman to do so. But as New Yorker writer Michael Shulman wrote in his 2023 book Oscar Wars, the Academy Awards has had a scandalous history. The first black woman to win an Oscar, Hattie McDaniel, Mammy in Gone with the Wind, was seated at a segregated table when she won in 1940. There's also the vicious feud between sisters Joan Fontaine and Olivia de Havilland. Rob Lowe dancing and singing with Snow White in 1989 to the tune of Proud Mary.
Lead lights keep on burning, candles keep on turning.
Worst Oscars ever? Discuss. Michael Shulman does in his terrifically comprehensive book, Oscar Wars, now out in paperback. And we welcome Michael Shulman to our studios. Happy almost Oscars.
Yeah, the time is now. It's upon us.
It's your
I'm
time.
I'm ready with my tux.
But let's go back, as you do, to the beginning. The Academy of Arts and Sciences was the brainchild of Louis B. Mayer, a vile person by all of your accounts. He was called the devil incarnate, not just evil, but the most evil man, untalented, mean, vicious, and vindictive.
I almost feel compelled to defend him now that you well, read all the meanest quotes. The Academy was intended in part to kind of preempt having the actors, writers, and directors unionize. In its first decade or so, it was very involved in labor disputes and contract negotiations. And because of that, the Academy was so hated among the rank and file in Hollywood that people would boycott it. You know, they would boycott the Oscars. What they did eventually by the end of the 30s was the president of the Academy was Frank Capra, the great director. He loved the Academy Awards. He loved the Academy. And he thought, if everyone's so angry at us for getting involved in labor stuff, we're just not going to do that stuff anymore. And he shed those responsibilities. And instead, the Academy really became the place that gives out the Oscars, which was the one thing that they had created that everyone really loved, because everyone loves winning awards.
Joan Fontaine makes her first appearance in your book just after the bombing of Pearl Harbor because FBI agents have knocked at this actress's door because she and her sister, Olivia de Havilland, were both born in Tokyo. And it was thought that they were Japanese-born. They were not. They were just born there. But then you go on to tell us about this feud between these two sisters.
It's the greatest tale of sibling rivalry in Hollywood history.
Yeah.
Maybe ever. I don't know. There's Cain and Abel, but then after that, there's Olivia de Havilland and Joan Fontaine. They were just like oil and water, and they were competitive about everything. Olivia became a movie star, so Joan became a movie star. They fought over men. They sort of competed over who would get married first, and that became who would win an Oscar first. So Olivia was actually nominated first. She famously played Melanie in Gone with the Wind. She was nominated for Best Supporting Actress and lost. Then the next year, Joan was nominated for Hitchcock's Rebecca. She lost. And then 1942, they were nominated at the same time in Best Actress, and it was the Battle of the Sisters. And Joan won for Hitchcock's Suspicion. And she writes in her memoir, No Bed of Roses, that the moment she won, she stood up and she saw Olivia like clasping her hand and looking up at her, and all of the animus from their years and years of hatred and loathing for each other just kind of jumped to the surface.
They made no bones about it. It's just remarkable. Yeah. Just one of the many stories you tell. Another is such an important story in American history, not just film history, which is one of the biggest scandals in Hollywood, the Joe McCarthy congressional hearings that led to the blacklisting of Hollywood screenwriters thought to be communists. Now, many people know Dalton Trumbo was one of the victims of this. He and other blacklisted screenwriters scrambled to this black market and wrote under fictional names.
1957, Deborah Carr of The King and I came out and presented the award for Best Motion Picture Story to someone named Robert Rich, who had written the story for a movie called The Brave One about a Mexican boy and his pet bull. Robert Rich was not there. Robert Rich could not be located after the awards were over. Robert Rich did not exist. He was imaginary. He was a front for Dalton Trumbo. And so Dalton Trumbo spent the next, like, 2 years sort of playing with the press and using the fact that he had secretly won this Oscar to try to turn the tables against the forces that had blacklisted him. And this actually pushed the Academy to rescind its rule against blacklisted people being eligible for the Oscars. And then, you know, he finally got off the blacklist in 1960 when he was credited for both Exodus and then Spartacus.
Spartacus, with Kirk Douglas as Spartacus, the leader of the slaves of the Romans. You remind us, Trumbo wrote a scene in which the Roman general tells the slaves they will live if they tell him who is Spartacus. Here's their response.
I'm Spartacus.
You write this collective heroism reflected those who protected Trumbo, you know, the blacklisted screenwriter.
Oh, yeah. When I rewatched Spartacus as I was researching the blacklist and the screenwriters who specifically wrote Academy Award-winning screenplays while they were on the blacklist, that scene just jumped out at me in a whole new way. Mm-hmm. That famous I Am Spartacus scene, it's about the power of the pseudonym. It's about if everyone is Spartacus, then no one is Spartacus. And you can sort of retain the anonymity and not give him up. And I just got chills when I watched the movie again and realized that this was, in a way, a kind of blacklist metaphor.
It's really quite something. Another thing that's very powerful is the experience of black Oscar winners. Hattie McDaniel, Sidney Poitier, Halle Berry, all winners, and you write, all found themselves representing everyone and pleasing no one.
Yeah, I mean, I had a chapter where I wove those three stories together, which happened across decades, you know. Hattie McDaniel won in 1940, Best Supporting Actress for Gone with the Wind, and then it wasn't until 1964 that Poitier won Best Actor, and then it wasn't until 2002 that Halle Berry became the first black woman to win in Best Actress. These are moments that we all remember as being very inspiring. They give very emotional, inspiring speeches. And they're celebratory. And yet, as I look closer at those three individual stories and how their careers and lives unfolded, they were all very isolated. And they all had this burden of, you know, representing an entire race of people who had not been let in to the Academy Awards.
I want to, you know, bring us up to today. Lily Gladstone is the front runner for her role as an Osage woman whose family is dying all around her in Killers of the Flower Moon. She would be the first Native American woman to win Best Actress.
Yeah, she would.
And it sounds like there might be a cautionary tale in that, you know, that it's a hard mantle to carry.
Yeah, in fact, I interviewed Lily Gladstone for The New Yorker a couple weeks ago. And having looked so closely at these past winners, like a story that jumped to mind was right after Sidney Poitier won in 1964, he was honored at the mayor of New York City's office, and he gave a press conference, and all the reporters kept asking him about civil rights. And he said, "Why are you asking me about my Negroness?" He said, "Why don't you ask me any human questions? Why don't you ask me about acting?" And I sort of thought about this. Well, I don't want to fall into that trap and just sort of have Lily Gladstone be, you know, a spokeswoman for Native American issues. She's very happy to talk about them, especially a language revitalization she's very passionate about. But I also was like, okay, you're an actress. You know, Emma Stone doesn't have to go around talking about, you know, her culture as she campaigns for Best Actress. So let's talk about acting with Lily Gladstone, too, because she's an incredible actress.
Well, again, staying with today's Oscars, maybe looking back just a little bit, you and I have talked about this. I've mentioned it on the air. I went to the Oscars the year Sally Field won for Best Actress for Places in the Heart. Robert Duvall had won Best Actor the year before, so he presented her award. My sister was married to him, so we were there. Afterward, they sweep you away to this magic elevator. Now, this was the year that Sally Field said, "You like me, you really like me."
Except that is a misquote.
Yes, yes.
Everyone says, "You like me, you really like me." In fact, it's, "You like me right now, you like me," which is a little bit different, isn't it?
Right. So, and I, again, perpetrated the misquote. But so we were getting in the elevator and she says to us, "How did I do?" And, you know, I love her. So we're like, "Oh, you did great." And then the door opened again and she went out to this press scrum where within seconds it had turned into these questions about, did she just have a terrible moment? And it turned into one of those moments that people mocked. And, you know, this happens with the Oscars. There's things that happen that kind of stay with you, that you don't plan on? And can you just reflect on some of those moments? They're all in your, they're in your book.
I mean, I love those moments when something a little bit nutty happens. Like, I think of, Jennifer Lawrence tripping on the stairs or,
which she's trying to forget.
Jack Palance doing one-arm push-ups when he won for City Slickers. I also love Roberto Benigni, going across the stairs, climbing over people for Life is Beautiful.
Life is Beautiful.
But I have been to the Oscars now 5 times, I think, and 2 of those 5 times, something absolutely insane has happened. My first year there was 2017, which was the year of the envelope mix-up with Moonlight and La La Land.
The whole cast of La La Land is called up on the stage as if they won. They didn't.
Moonlight, in fact, won. And I was there in the press room, actually, the room you were talking about where they bring the winners after. And I just remember everyone in the press room screamed collectively when that was revealed. And then the 4th time I went in 2022 was The Slap.
The Slap. Will Smith gets up out of his seat, slaps Chris Rock. Seismic. It is all here in Michael Shulman's book, Oscar Wars, A History of Hollywood in Gold, Sweat, and Tears. I don't think you left one thing out, and it's a great read for film lovers. Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin.